Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Cody, and you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by Cal Mez.
You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and this is Cal Mez, your host this evening. We got a lot of things on the agenda this evening, and we'll have lots of people calling in. You're welcome to give us a call here at 347-989-0048, and today is Wednesday. In case for those people who are wondering what day of the week it is. And this evening we have several things that we wanted to talk about. And one being that we have legislation at the Navajo Nation and Navajo Nation Council that specifically is called the Healthy Dene Nation Act. And for those people out there who are not familiar with this particular act, it was sponsored by Danny Simpson and also people that were a group by the name of Dene Community Advocacy Alliance, and we have invited Gloria Yeh to be with us this evening, and also we have Ms. Heather Anderson, Claw Anderson, from the Office of the Navajo Nation President, and we will discuss this all in detail. So as I'm waiting for these calls, there's a lot of issues that we are going to be considering. Also, some of the interesting things that are happening over in Arizona, we also, let me give you the rundown for this evening. At 7:15, we're going to have State Representative Jamesita Peshlakai is going to be calling in to discuss the recent legislation. She'll give all the information about that. And we understand that Governor Jan Brewer had vetoed that particular bill. Okay, so that's one. Number two is at 7:30, we're going to have Marty Shabala. And then at 8 o'clock, we will have Bill Donovan. And and 8:15, we're going to have a new guest, and we're going to be talking about the ICIP, which is that $400 million that the Navajo Nation Council has earmarked, and we'll get all the updates on that. So please call in while we're awaiting the calls from these guests, and looking forward to hearing from you. And of course, you guys are welcome to call at any time. And again, I am so absolutely thankful that you are the listeners, and we have people who just call in to listen in, because that's their only connection. You can actually go to the www.blogtalkradio/KelNez, find the episode that is currently playing, and remember there is a 5-second delay, so anybody who calls in, please know that and to turn your radios down, because I've had people who call in and there's feedback and people get very confused. Again, this is Cal Nez with the Politics on the Navajo Nation. So with these pauses, there's calls that are coming in that I am going to activate. And I, again, would like to welcome all of you, and you're welcome to call in if you have any questions and have opinions and things like that at 347-989-0048. And we have a caller, and who am I talking to? Hello, caller.
Good evening. This is Heather Claus.
Oh, hi, Heather. Yeah, I'm... I appreciate you calling in. So if you can just bear with us here, I will get the rest of the we're still waiting for Gloria Begay to call in. So I gave them the number, and so it's quite a... So, Heather, while we're waiting here, could you introduce yourself, give us a little background of what, where you work at, and, of course, I know, but a lot of the listeners out there from all over the world, of course, we call ourselves the World Voice on Navajo Politics, so, and that literally has become true. So, again, thank you for being with us. Heather, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, thanks, Cal. My name is Heather Claus. I'm Kiani, born for Claus Chi'i. I am the attorney legal counsel for Mr. President Ben Shelley. I've been his legal counsel since he came into office January the 11th. And had an opportunity to serve the Navajo people through his office. I graduated my undergrad from Arizona State University and then went on to law school at Sandra Day Connors College of Law at ASU, and definitely have enjoyed my time, so that's pretty much my background.
Okay. Well, welcome. I do appreciate it. And I am getting some messages from Ms. Gloria Begay saying that she can't seem to get through. I'm not sure what the busy signal is. You seem to have called in fairly easily, and so I will await her call. So if you, I'll put you on hold. There, I do appreciate it, and Gloria again messages me. She says, can't get through. So I'm not sure what the situation is here. So she might be having some issues. Obviously she's having issues with her connection or something. I'm not sure. So I'll put you on hold, and I'll be right back, and I'll put us on a commercial while I try to remedy this situation. So please bear with us, all you listeners. Thank you very, very much.
Talk to the host. Call 347-989-0048 or listen in at www.blogtalkradio.com/KelNez. To talk to the host, call 347-989-0048 or listen in at www.blogtalkradio.com/KelNez.
Again, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez. I appreciate all you listeners out there, and you're welcome to give us a call. But anyway, while we're waiting for Gloria Begage from the Diné Citizen Advocacy Alliance, there's a lot of words there, but yes, and that's who is going to be calling in. But in the meantime, we'll go ahead and just get rolling here. Let me kind of set the stage here. We have a legislation that had just gone through, and the Navajo Nation Council passed it, and it went over to the president's office. The president's office then vetoed the bill, and this particular bill is called the Healthy Diné Nation Act. And basically, we've all have heard about this particular legislation, and that this legislation is known for as the junk food, but it really isn't just about the junk food. The junk food is just literally half of the equation. The other half is really the healthy foods. One is going to be taxed and the other is not going to be taxed. So there's going to be a lot of questions that that the listeners and also the people who are members of the Politics on the Navajo Nation group page, where the discussion has been, if the Navajo Nation is passing this, is it in the name of money, revenues, or is it in the name of health? So these are a lot of philosophical questions that I think that a lot of the listeners, the Navajo people out there, and once we get past that, then you get into another stage, and that stage is the actual taxation, the taxation portion of it, and how is the Navajo Nation going to collect, and once it's collected, these funds are then are earmarked to go to the chapters. I got a legislation that was sent to me with one of the chapters, and that chapter basically put down, identified what the junk food or what's considered as a junk food, what is considered healthy food, and then at the very last part of their resolution, they put down that these monies are going to be coming back to the Navajo Nation or to the chapters to build health facilities. And that pretty much, if you say health facility, it kind of just opens up a whole gambit of, well, is it going to be a building? What size building? And is it going to be health equipment? And once the health equipment is put up, is it going to be running trails? There's all sorts of interpretive things in there, and it'd be great to hear from Gloria Begay so that they can tell us more in depth about exactly what their plans are and how we're going to make these connections. So that kind of gives you a basis about what this, quote, junk food tax about and the 2%. So having said that, since we have Heather Plaw with us from the Office of the Navajo Nation President, and she introduced herself, and she is listening, and again, I want to thank Heather for being with us. I hope you don't mind me calling you Heather, which I'll, you know, if you want me to call you Ms. Plaw, I will also do that. But yeah, so the Office of the President vetoed this bill. Heather, can you get into that part of it and clarify or explain to the listeners the reasons why and so forth and so forth? So, Heather.
Yeah, Heather's fine. That's perfect. Well, basically, there was both some of those questions that you asked and some of the definitely questions that we were asking to as well when we heard that the bill passed the NABI and then also with the council are, you know, how is this going to be implemented? We definitely understood that there was a lot of support for it, and of course President Shelley has always been supportive of healthy decisions and healthy choices, but there's another side of this is actually the administrative aspects of it and the reality of how the nation would be able to implement such a tax. And those are the biggest questions. It wasn't the subject matter, because definitely the president, like I said, is very supportive of a healthier people, Navajo people. But it was more of the implementation and the administration of how the nation was going to be able to implement the taxes that we had a lot of questions on.
Yeah. So now, having said that, and I appreciate you sharing that with us, and so, you know, it's good to know that the Navajo Nation president, Ben Shelley, is supportive of the of a healthy nation or healthy Diné nation. And so it was more of the technicality of how these taxes are going to go. So can you also share with us what where does it stand at right now?
Basically, in President Shelley's our memo that he did for his justification of vetoing it, I mean, like he said, he's definitely very supportive of it. In fact, he made the notion to go ahead and he'll work with his departments, probably mostly fall down in health and also social services, and the tax commission to figure out how to look at this legislation and to figure out how to deal with it if it does come up again. You know, one thing that we have concerns with is we've always had taxes come in. In fact, we have the education tax, we have the judicial complex tax, the road tax, which goes into the judicial complex. So we have those types of taxes in place. But see, the taxes that have been in place have always been increased all the way across the board. And then this one, it looks like you would need some sort of regulation to give guidance to help with either it be stores, our consumers, what is going to be taxed and what's not going to be taxed. And I know that people who advocated for the legislation feel that it's clear in the legislation of what's going to be taxed or not. One of the questions that I had in there is that it was going to be a percentage of the sugar. Any project basically has a certain amount of sugar that's in it would be considered. But then again, would that be considering ketchup? Would it be considering bread? Some of those have high contents of sugar in it. So we needed actually somebody to give us guidance, and not only necessarily for the regulation of it, internal governmental regulations, but also more importantly, the consumers as well as the retail stores who are going to have that this is going to affect them. I think that was one of the main issues that we had. But definitely in his veto message, President Shelley did say that he is ready to help and bring together the social services and health department to come together and pull some recommendations so that the nation may be better prepared for the legislation should it come up again, or even to be proactive to say, how can we deal with it? But you bring up a good point, Cal, regarding that. Is this basically a money-generating purpose, or is it a health matter purpose? And it could be a little bit of both, but, I mean, I think that's definitely an interesting question that you brought up.
Yeah, and also another dimension of this is that, okay, well, we're collecting these taxes, and so there was an issue on the – wow, I'm getting calls. I'm not sure what's going on the Internet, but it says people are having – time calling in, that the phone is busy. I've got another caller who just said that they tried to call in, but the telephone number here is 347-989-0048. Well, Heather, you're able to call in, so I'm not sure what the problem is. So, but yeah, having said that, back to this junk food thing. Now, is it true? And this is one of the things that was a the deal breaker, if you will, was the taxation or the Navajo Nation Tax Commission or Tax Office. They were undermanned. Is that true? Or, you know, because they've been doing collecting taxes from Navajo businesses for a long time. I'm not understanding how that this particular office could be underfunded, undermanned, whatever the reasons are there. What's the status on that?
Well, Cal, I mean, the whole government, if you look at it, is underfunded on every level. You know, we try to do more with less. I mean, the tax commission at this point, you know, I've been told, they're a regulator, they go out there and collect the taxes, which technically that's not true. The people will actually do the self-reporting. And so one of the arguments is that the grocery stores or the Navajo Nation people stands or whoever's selling junk food restaurants, that they would self-report this. But also you have to have an education and a time to go ahead and give these particular retailers and consumers education on the matter, how to deal with it, how will it transition, how will the reporting be, do we need new tax forms to be created, how to go ahead and maybe possibly have the time to post a change on the website so they have an opportunity to change their registers or their calculations, anything of that sort. So, I mean, when you're saying that you don't understand how the tax commission can be considered underfunded and this be an issue, I don't necessarily think that that was a deal breaker. It was just a realization of how much work would need to be done. And if the legislation would have also looked through and said, instead of how the legislation was written, is that basically once President signed off on the legislation, it would be implemented. So there was really no time or no point in the legislation that gave the public the education opportunity to figure out and readjust and how to deal with this new tax. I had several people come to my office and just say, well, let President implement it whenever he feels like it needs to be implemented. But that's not how the legislation was written, and I don't think the legislators would appreciate that the President will go ahead and decide when to go ahead and implement this or not to implement this. So I think that's overstepping his authority and going into legislating. So that's something that I kind of also explained to them that I didn't think was appropriate to try to deal with it in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's really good information, and I do appreciate that. And I think that, this whole tax would also affect the, not only the consumers, and how would it affect the vendors at the localized level could be one of the questions that are, you know, that would be out there. But my understanding was that this is only going to be, this tax is only going to apply to the C stores, not necessarily all the vendors or the people who sell the soda pops like along parade routes. Am I correct on that?
I don't think so. It didn't specifically state that in the legislation. No, it just said the items. And so, I mean, I also had, there was people that came to the President's office to advocate on both sides, for the President to go ahead and sign it or for him not to sign it based on concerns that they had. But everybody definitely agreed, and I think this is where I commend the group or those who actually push and delegates who actually push forward the legislation. I mean, the subject matter of the legislation is definitely something that's important. With the high levels of diabetes on the Navajo Nation, it's an epidemic, and it is something that we definitely need to be concerned about. So the intent and their what I can admire definitely is their passion, their commitment to go ahead and try to do something, or their actions that they're trying to do and continue. And I actually would actually say that they did accomplish, I think, what they were set out to do, is to bring that health issues to the forefront of the Navajo Nation. With that being said, I think if we, you know, a couple people advocated for us to just sign it into legislation and then we figure it out later, I think that would actually do the opposite, I think. Because I think people who had serious questions about that or confusions about that, all those questions and confusions and concerns, I think would have overshadowed the real essence of what this legislation was trying to do. And I would strongly didn't want that to happen. I mean, after we discussed the matter with the president and the rest of the advisors, we didn't want to overshadow the purpose of what this legislation was to do. I mean, it was definitely honorable and definitely something that I felt the passion of the people who came in asking the president to sign off on it. And that was powerful, and I think that was something to definitely be commended, and for people to understand this group's intentions is definitely something that I support. But then, again, we have to also look at the administration aspects of it. If we were unable to implement this the way the legislation was read, then it would actually fall on the executive branch who implements legislation that they're going to be saying, okay, what are they doing? What's going on? Why isn't this happening? And so, I mean, those are the realities that we had to deal with how unrealistic right now, if president was to sign this into law the next day, that we would have to basically start collecting taxes for that, and people were still confused. There really wasn't any fund management plan that was actually implemented yet either to how would this work. If you collect the taxes, and like you read off on that chapter's resolution, that it would go to building parks, it would go to building fitness centers, it would, you know, go to functions of having people go ahead and how to improve our health. That was definitely admirable too, but how, just like everything else, there's going to be a limited number of money coming in. How is that project list going to be looked at and prioritized? So some of those things weren't even in place yet. So if, like I said, if we had to immediately start collecting taxes, where does that money go into a fund management plan? So some of these are some of the questions that I was going through when I was reading the legislation and us realistically trying to figure out how to implement this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's very good information. So it just wasn't just a bill coming through and saying, okay, no, we're not going to do this. There's a lot of thought, some legal issues, and some practical business application or office tax money management that were considered. And of course, I'm sure you guys probably talked with the Navajo Nation Tax Commission and brought people in, and most likely you have also have talked to the proponents of the legislation. So there's a lot of thought process, and so I appreciate knowing that. Heather, I'm going to put you on hold. I've got a state representative, Jamesita Peshlakai, is, I believe, on the phone. So we will get right back with you, and hopefully in the meantime, I can have Gloria Begay try to call back in. So again, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez, the world voice on Navajo politics, and I believe we have coming off there. Talk to you later.
are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by CalMez.
Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is CalMez, the world of voice of Navajo politics. This evening we have several guests that are going to be calling in. Appreciate the calls, and we are talking about several topics, but the main topic is the Navajo Nation junk food, or the actual legislation being called Healthy Dené Nation Act, sponsored by Danny Simpson, and it is has been vetoed, and that's why we have Heather Claw from the Navajo Nation President's Office is on the phone with us. And so we also have other issues and other situations in the state of Arizona. And I appreciate, I believe this is State Representative Jamesita Pashlakai is on with us. Are you on with us, State Representative?
Yes, I am, Cal. Yeah.
Well, yeah, welcome. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling in. Well, specifically, I had asked you to give us a call, which you did, and you also have another a senator from the state of Arizona also on the phone with you. And I so I'll let you guys take it away. Give us an update. What is going on in the state of Arizona?
Okay. Thank you very much, Cal. And also, let me just go ahead and introduce myself for your listeners. I want to, today we had a kind of a very exciting day down here in Phoenix at the Capitol. There was some, a controversial Senate bill that came through the system just within the past week, and I think a lot of people have heard about it. It's Senate Bill 1062, and, it was vetoed this very evening, this very late afternoon, by our governor, Janet Jan Brewer. And so we were going to call in, I was going to call him and give an update about the bill, but now that she's vetoed it, now the whole scenario around what I was going to talk about has changed, because there's a celebratory mood that I find myself in. There was a lot of press at the Capitol today, and our own minority leader in the Senate, Senator Anna Tovar, was there. And tonight I'm here in Phoenix at an event hosted by the Latino Caucus, which I am a part of, and so I've asked her to join me, and but right now she's the host to this event, so I'm hoping that she can come out and join us on the radio shortly. But other than that, I guess just to do a quick update on what we've been doing down here in at the legislature. I'll give some folks the background on Legislative District 7. In 2010, the United States Census Bureau came out to northern Arizona, and of course they did the 10-year census, and during that time they redistricted the whole country and the whole state. And what used to be District 2 was changed, and the lines of District 7 now do not include the community or the city of Flagstaff. And so what happened was it created a much bigger legislative district geographically. So now it includes 7 counties. That's Mojave, Coconino, Navajo, Apache, Graham, Gila, and a little part of Pinal County. So it's a huge district. It is the largest district in the United States. It is like twice the size of Massachusetts. And so so that's a huge region. And, of course, the diversity of the people and the environment. I have 8 tribal communities in the district, starting with, let's see, the Hualapai tribe, the Havasupai tribe, the Kanab Paiute, the San Juan Southern Paiute, the Navajo, the Hopi, the White Mountain Apache, the San Carlos Apache. And there's a small population of Zuni along the New Mexico border, just south of I-40, south of Window Rock. And that's kind of adjacent to the Zuni Reservation in New Mexico. So it is a huge district and includes the Grand Canyon and the Little Colorado River, so that whole area. And my seatmates are Representative Albert Hale, and we have, when I came into office last year, our senator was Senator Jack Jackson Jr., and in July, he took an appointment in Washington, D.C., with the president, President Obama. He was given a new title and appointed a newly created position called Tribal Liaison. So in his stead, the Apache County Board of Supervisors, it was their task to appoint a person that would take the senator's seat. And at that point, there was the Board of Supervisors came together and they named an appointee, and that was a young man by the name of Carlisle Begay, and he's our newly appointed senator. So he's in the Senate, and I, myself, and Representative Hale still work in the House. So, and I, myself, just to give you an update of the bills that were created, I, as the prime sponsor, there was 11 bills, and only one of those bills has really gotten traction this session. And the primary bills that you will hear about, and it's going to be in a press release, I think that's coming out tomorrow or today, tomorrow or Friday actually, is the House concurrent. It's actually a memorial bill to create a Native American Veterans Memorial Highway. The proposed highway is 89 North from Flagstaff to the Utah border. And then Native American Women Veterans Highway, that is the highway that goes through Kayenta from Four Corners to the 89 Junction just west of Tuba City. And then Native American Code Talker Highway, which would be from Yatahe, the New Mexico line, to the community of Tuba City in western Navajo. And working right now with Congresswoman Kirkpatrick's office to have Congress designate Interstate 40 from New Mexico to the community of Flagstaff. And this has been done in the past, but we're trying for it again. It wasn't successful during those previous attempts. So that highway, that freeway, the interstate, the proposed name change would be Navajo Kotoffer Memorial Trail. And so that's in the work. And other bills that were never assigned to committee were a water infrastructure appropriation, asking for $4.83 million for water infrastructure funding in the district on the Navajo Nation, and primarily in Kayenta, out around the Four Corners area, coming more towards to the city and Kayenta and Chinle and Mini Farm. And then hopefully we saw a vision that where funding could, we could try for funding in future years to get water infrastructure to other communities more west and south from Utah and Colorado line. So, and then another one was basically a House resolution, kind of like what they call a postcard to Congress, asking for review of the impact of displacement of Navajos that had previously lived off the reservation boundaries along Highway 89. There's this whole area when I was a young lady, when I was a child, I was told that the Netra, that area, is much further than the boundaries of the Navajo Reservation, what we are limited to now. And so one of those areas is Wapaki National Monument. And so the political climate being very different from the old school of the 1950s and 60s, and back when Wapaki was made into a national monument by a presidential decree, there was a lot of families that were displaced. They were relocated. They were shown the door from the reservation. So we want to open up that conversation and see if there can be a resolution, and through communication to see if there's a way to have these people welcome back onto their ancestral land. And I know that's a huge thing to ask, but I think we're in a place that it is our right. It is our right to ask for ancestral land and just even the opportunity to be heard. So that was the one bill that is finding some traction in this Republican-held legislature. So that's one of the ones that got some traction. But I'm trying to think off the top of my head what my other bills are. I'm not in my office. I'm not on my computer. So some of these things I've been following for a while. And yeah, and I'm actually standing in a parking lot in North Phoenix because I'm at this event, the Latino Caucus. Yeah. So, and Senator Tovar hasn't joined me quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's okay. Well, you know, you give us a lot of background information. We really, really do appreciate it. Your district not only just covers just not only the Navajo Nation, but there's many other tribes that are in your district. For all those listeners that are joining us, we have Ms. Jamesita Pushlakai, who is state representative. Am I right on that?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah. Yes, and so, you know, I would like to have you be part of our show on a weekly basis to kind of give us an update of all these legislations, and I'm sure those are not the only ones that you're working on. So it'd be nice to have you join us so that our our your constituency can be updated on things that you're doing. And really, as a Native American and as a Navajo, I am just so proud of the state, the leaders at the state level, the Senate, the state representatives, and I'm just so proud. Here in the state of Utah, we have one Native that's in there, and Angela Romero, and so take a lot of pride in that. So anytime that that situation, we have some over in New Mexico that I will also bring on board. So again, thank you very much for keeping us updating, for calling in. So I'm gonna ask you to call in like once a week. Give us a 5-minute update.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah. That would be fine. And also, just to I know that people will probably be. We'll probably expect some information on SB 1062, that was a religious freedom bill that started in the Senate with Senator Yarbrough, and then came into the House and became House Bill 1062, sponsored by Representative Farnsworth, and it went up to the governor's office, and she vetoed that today. And I just want to say that I think the governor did a very, very good thing. And I really respect her for really looking at the moral impact of that bill. It had this title that was deceptive. It said religious freedom. And I know it was out in the media being referred to as the anti-LGBT bill. But for me, looking at it, I thought that was looking at it in a very, with a very narrow vision. And as a Native American, we've experienced racism and discrimination because of religious differences. But we came through the 1950s, 1960s, we came through the civil rights era, and the generations before us fought so hard for us to have the freedoms that we have today. And I felt that this bill would take us back to a time where somebody could just not be willing to be compassionate or empathetic to others and just say, I don't want to do any work with you on religious work for my religious beliefs. And it created, it emboldened people that were not kind and compassionate. And I'm really glad that the governor took a look at this. She listened to the greater nation, her constituents, the state, business leaders, and it was really going to impact us badly as a state. And I'm really happy she did what she did, and I think she'll leave her office with a great legacy, saying no to this type of legislation in our beloved Arizona. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Those are very, very powerful, very powerful words. And in closing, can you give us some quick information about how people can get in touch with you?
Well, anybody can go on to the Arizona State Legislative website. You can just Google Arizona Legislature, and the website that will pop up, it'll give you some different options, and you just press, click on the Senate if you want to speak to your senator, or if you want to speak to the representatives, which is myself, or Representative Hale, you click on the House button, and then it'll pop up a window, and then you just see all these names of the different representatives in the state, and there's 60 representatives and 30 senators, and you just click on the person that you want to speak to. So in my case, it would be James Tita Peshlakai, and my page will pop up, and it'll give you some background on me as an individual, and then also the committees that I'm assigned to, also the bills that I've sponsored and co-sponsored, as well as my contact information. And my email address is jpeshlakai@azleg.gov. And then my phone number is 602-926-5160. And my assistant's name is Donna, and she's a really wonderful lady, and she really takes care of the folks that, my constituents that call into the office with their concerns. And I'm really, my door is really open to my constituents, because I'm here to, as your representative, and I really care about what people's concerns are. I'm always willing to listen. So, yeah, Donna will put
there
in.
You go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. That sounds great. Agushila, and I thank you for calling in. That was State Representative from Arizona and Jamesita Peshlakai. Absolutely powerful word she speaks there. Yeah, Donna, and we'll talk to you next week again. Just call in, and I appreciate it. So you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, the world of voice of Navajo politics. This is Cal Nez, and we want to thank all of our guests that are on the phone with us. I appreciate Ms. Heather Claw from the Office of the President, and she's an attorney there, or the legal advisor, I guess is a better term, for the Office of the President. And now we finally have Ms. Gloria Begay is on the or is on the phone with us after many tries. I'm not sure what was going on, but she's able to call in. So, Heather, I appreciate you being with us, hanging in there with us. I know it's a little bit past hour. And also, Gloria, thank you for joining us, Gloria Begay. And could you, Heather's already gone through and introduced herself. Could you tell us your name, where you're from, all the wonderful stuff that you're doing to the listeners? Gloria.
Yes. Can you hear me, Cal?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for allowing me to be on your program, and I appreciate the opportunity to share some information about our legislation called the Healthy Dene Nation Act. And just like you described, you know, there's two pieces of legislation that was considered by the council and that was successfully voted in January 30th. However, when it went to President Shelley, it was vetoed. And so we are working with our sponsoring delegate, Danny Simpson, to go back to the council and to request the council to do an override veto of President Shelley's action. And I was listening to Heather Claw's presentation, and I appreciate her acknowledging, you know, that our group, the Dene Community Advocacy Alliance, has really worked hard for almost 2 years on this legislation. And so at first, you know, it was one piece of legislation, and then we were instructed that we had to break it into two pieces of legislation. So we actually, in our journey, created an eighth category of a Navajo tax. And so in the journey, too, we've learned a lot about Navajo politics and the Navajo government process. So this is a different approach of presenting this type of legislation to the Navajo Council. Normally, these pieces of legislation go through a Navajo government division, like maybe education or health or so on. But this one has come truly from the people. And we did a lot of work with many chapters. We obtained 47 chapter resolutions into all the five agency councils for support resolutions, and then had 19 health organizations supporting our legislation, and all of the documents went to the Navajo Council. And so, you know, we've done all this work, and so, of course, we were disappointed with the president's veto, and I want to maybe make some comments as to what Heather said in regards to, you know, why maybe the president vetoed the legislation. And I know we realized that we had worked with the Navajo Tax Office. We did a all-day training work session with them, and then we met with the director five different times, and we tried to clarify very much, you know, in the legislation, you know, what we needed in terms of the taxation process and implementation. So anyway, we worked with them and got the language in the legislation as to what the Navajo Council wanted, in addition to what the tax office wanted. And in those discussions, we worked with the Navajo Community Development Division, and they agreed to go ahead and take the identified 2% revenues that were going to be generated from the junk food, and then we were going to work with them to set up that funds management plan. And we were told that, you know, we wait for the legislation to be passed, and then work with the Division of Community Development to develop that funds management plan. And I wanted to kind of clarify also that Heather mentioned that, you know, there were limited funds, and, you know, we discussed this, Cal, yesterday, that, you know, there's not going to be a lot of money generated from the 2%. It's going to be very small amounts. But what we wanted to do was to work with the tax office and Division of Community Development and have all the chapters, 110 chapters, get some of that wellness project fund. And some of the smaller chapters would, of course, get very small amounts, while maybe the larger chapters would get maybe larger amounts of money. And so we gave a list of optional wellness-type projects. It could be bike trails, walking trails, maybe community gardens, farmer markets, and then way up all the way to a wellness center. And then one of the delegates even wanted a swimming pool. So those kinds of larger, big facility projects would take a lot of money. So our thinking was to work with each of the chapters and help them do their health assessments in their communities, identify, you know, exactly kind of like what they feel they need in their community. And it might be just even simple traditional cooking classes, or maybe some health evening classes and so on like that. So that could vary. And our group is going to be working on a toolkit, what we're calling a toolkit, that will have all these different optional wellness projects with a design plan and a budget attached. And maybe some of the chapters could just leverage their small amount of money to get seed money to maybe go out for some grants to the outside foundations, corporations, and we've already been offered, you know, many different kind of, especially food system projects. So there's all kind of opportunities out there, and just like Heather said, you know, we have built a large awareness as to the health issues, and then also that there's many good opportunities here for communities to jump in, go into discussions at their chapter meetings and design their own wellness projects that can tailor and fit their local community needs. So, you know, we know that there's, again, limited funds, and but we wanted all the chapters to have access to those funds whether it might be $1,500 here and maybe, I don't know, maybe $5,000 there, you know, to larger chapters. But we wanted to have all the chapters have access to that wellness fund management project fund, because we just know that it was identified by the U.S. Department of Agriculture that every one of our Navajo communities is called a food desert. None of our Navajo communities have access to affordable and quality foods on the Navajo Nation. So we have a lot of work to do to get, you know, these kinds of foods back into our communities in some fashion. And if it takes us working with all the different Navajo stores and convenience stores, we really want to work with them. And we've already made some contacts with Larry Curley, the director for the Navajo Health Division, and we attended their Navajo food policy meetings, their Navajo Health Department meetings, and so on like that. So we're looking for a lot of partners. It's going to take everybody to come in and make a healthier Navajo Nation.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Gloria, giving us some feedback. And what I'm going to do is we're going to go into the Bill Donovan segment. And so Heather and Gloria, if you wouldn't mind holding for just a few minutes, I will be right back and we'll continue this discussion. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. And I believe we have Mr. Bill Donovan from the Navajo Nation and also the reporter for the Navajo Times with us. Mr. Bill Donovan, take it away.
Thank you, Cal. Tomorrow marks the official start of the 2014 tribal election season. Candidates can start filing for tribal offices on Thursday. Tribal members will be selecting two people to run for tribal president, as well as two to run for the various tribal council districts in the primary. But while there will probably be six or seven people running for tribal president, a look at how the Navajo people have voted for their chairman and president over the past 50 years shows one simple fact. In almost every case, the two people who start out on day one with the biggest political base come out on top in the primary. The only year this didn't happen was in 1996, and that was the first year since 1970 that neither Peter McDonald nor Peter Senzel ran for office. No one in the 1996 primary came in with a political base, so it was wide open for Albert Hale, an attorney, to come in and control that election. That is not the case this year. As this tribal election season begins, two men are coming in with a massive political base, Joe Shirley Jr. and Ben Shelley. Each of these, without one day of campaigning, are guaranteed to have several thousand votes in their pockets. All of the other candidates running for president will probably start out with a couple of hundred votes, maybe a few hundred, which are going to put them far behind Shirley and Shelley from the very beginning. The official election season lasts less than 3 months, and anyone who knows anything about tribal elections knows that getting the undecided voter to support you is a very difficult task. Off-reservation elections are controlled by the television. Candidates spend tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars on television ads. Television news programs cover every aspect of the race, going from controversy to controversy, swaying voters in one direction or another. That does not happen in Navajo elections. No money is spent on television ads. Instead, the bulk of the money is spent on radio ads in which the candidates target the people most likely to vote, the middle-aged and the elderly, the veterans and the tribal employees. Very little money is spent to sway off-reservation or young Navajo voters because, historically, they have not come out in force in any of the previous elections. The problem is that most of the people in those three groups are already supporters of either Shelley or Shirley. and are not likely to turn to another candidate. So what the other candidates do is use what limited resources they have for radio ads and then start crisscrossing the reservation, attending chapter meetings, where they may get a chance to speak to 30 or 40 people and may come out of the meeting with an extra 10 votes. Sherry and Shelley have already started out several thousand votes ahead, and getting an extra 10 or 15 votes for these other candidates isn't going to get any candidate anywhere near enough votes to challenge those two people. So unless someone like McDonald or Zah decides to get into the race, and I wouldn't hold your breath on that happening, if you were a betting man, put your money on Shirley and Shelley to make it through the primary and face each other in the general election. This is Bill Donovan with a newsflash from the Navajo Reservation.
And you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by Cal Mez.
On the internet radio, and you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and also we have a couple of guests that are on the phone with us, and we appreciate Mr. Bill Donovan for giving us his usual interesting angles on Navajo politics. So this evening's discussion is about the Healthy Dene Nation Act, which is on the news media has been called the junk food tax. And so we have Ms. Gloria Begay from the Dene Community Advocacy Alliance, and we also have from the Office of the President, Ms. Heather Claw is also on the phone with us. And so we've pretty much heard both sides of the of this story or the legislation or the act. And so, Heather, anything that you want to rebut in terms of what Ms. Begay has just shared with us?
I don't think there's really anything to rebut. I mean, I appreciate Gloria sharing her understanding of, you know, what the concept of the legislation was and you know, the understanding of how and what they're wanting to do. I definitely appreciate hearing from her, and it's definitely nice to hear from Gloria. I'm not sure, Gloria, if you came to the president's office. I didn't have an opportunity to meet with the group that sat down at the president's office, so it's definitely nice to meet you.
Thank you, Heather.
Gloria.
Okay, yeah, this is Gloria, and I didn't get to introduce myself. I was so excited about being on the show, but my name is Gloria Ann Begay. Tchitni Ainge, Tchitni Abashichin, Tzifana Adishiche, Adil Kabonha Adishinella. And I was raised out at Inscription House, Arizona, at my grandmother's sheep and ranch camp. And so I've had the opportunity to work on the Navajo Nation all of my career, excepting 10 years out in Washington, D.C. And so I'm a retired school teacher, and then I came into the circle of advocacy And I just know that there's so many issues facing our people that, you know, if unless we can try to address some of these issues and find solutions to solve some of these issues, you know, we're not going to progress as a Navajo Nation. And my deep feeling about the health issue now is that, you know, the health, the ill health of the Navajo people are impacting our workforce now and also even affecting our learning capabilities of our children and students. And I've been in and out of Navajo education for 4 years, and I've not seen a lot of progress with the learning of our Navajo children. So this is what kind of led me to explore, well, maybe our children need to be more healthier to learn better. And when I started really digging into studies and contacting health professionals and understanding, you know, all of these health issues and the effects of bad food and poor physical activity and even managing stress, much more productive than it could be. And I'm saying the workforce, too, because Delegate Simpson was telling us, you know, he's on the Budget and Finance Committee, and the health program for Navajo Nation employees has increased because a lot of employees are taking time off the job, being sick, or going to doctor appointments, or they're not being productive, you know, on their work site. So, you know, right there we're seeing evidence, you know, of the effect of ill health on the Navajo workforce. And then, of course, I see it on the learning capabilities of our children. And when there are more than 250 Navajo schools on and near Navajo Nation, and only 5% of our schools meet the state exams, one has to look at, you know, for the past 6 years, why aren't our children, you know, really learning better then? And so I've been doing diabetes prevention lessons with students in various Navajo schools, and the children are telling me, oh, I'm eating popcorn potato chips for breakfast, and I eat that also for dinner. You know, my mom and dad's working all the time, or they're not here. So, you know, those are non-nutritious foods that have no brain power, to, you know, for our children. And then our advocates even went into the stores on the Navajo, and we went in and started calculating between 55 to 85% of the food products in the stores are junk food or soda pop. So that's a very large number. So we really are working with Navajo Nation Division of Health. They just completed a Navajo food study of the stores on Navajo, and we're anxious to see the results. And so, you know, there's a lot of work to be done out there. And again, you know, I'd like all of us to help in this health issue, no matter, you know, if it's an individual, an organization, or, you know, we just need to help each other with this health problem.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, again, listeners, you're welcome to call in to ask either side of the equation here, the proponents and as well as the opponents. But I'm beginning to find out that we all agree, both sides, from the president's office, from the Navajo Nation government, and as well as the from this advocacy group, that this is health-related, and we all agree on that. So now, nonetheless, the legislation has been vetoed. So where do we go from here? I mean, is it a done deal? Is it going to be re-resurrected? We've heard Danny Simpson, our council delegate who sponsored this bill, saying that he was going to override the veto. Could either one of you address that, please?
I mean, that is our legislative process. If there is a legislation that the president vetoed, then the council does have the opportunity to go ahead and override it with a 3/4 vote. That means they have to get 16 out of 24 council delegates to vote on it. And then that's part of the legislative process. I mean, that it goes
the opportunity to do that is written in the law. So, I mean, it sounds like if that's the case to go for. But it still doesn't address the administrative issues that we had a concern of in the first place. Like I said, I think I could understand meeting with a few of the people who came in and talked to me directly, and including Mr. Danny Simpson. I mean, you can definitely understand the passion that they had for it and the belief that they had for it, which was very inspiring, actually, to sit down and discuss these issues of how people are so caring and concerned about the Navajo, their, our own Navajo people, in order to go ahead and deal with it. But, I mean, like I said, it had nothing to do with the substance of it or the intent of the legislation. It had to do everything to do with the implementation of it. But, I mean, that is a process within our Navajo Nation government. So, I mean, it's always open for them to go ahead and do it that way through the council.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Gloria?
Okay. In terms of implementation, we do understand that the tax office staff, you know, are understaffed. And so when we did meet with President Shelley a couple of weeks ago, and I was with the group of 12 that met with the president, Mr. Simpson said, you know, well, you know, we understand what's going on with the tax office, and we are even willing to put 1/8% of our 2% tax revenues to help, you know, the tax office, maybe a part-time staff or maybe overtime, you know, to deal with the collection of this 2% revenues. And then again, you know, like I mentioned, when we were told we would wait for the legislation to pass, and then we would design the funds management plan with community development and also the tax commission office. So we thought, well, that's where we can really tweak out, you know, the implementation side of the tax revenue collection and then the distribution back out to the chapters. And the community development director and assistant director both told us that, you know, we can help monitor those funds. We can always ask for, you know, a look at their budgets to make sure that whatever 2% revenue they were going to obtain is going to be used for wellness projects. And so, you know, we feel that, you know, we want to work, you know, with Navajo Nation, and, you know, there's all the different various divisions in Navajo government that, you know, are to us going to be partners, you know, in this effort to make sure that the implementation and the management, you know, can be well designed and not maybe a huge issue. I used to work for Navajo government, and so I understand the process. I also taught Navajo government in high school. So, you know, to me it's doable, especially when it considers, you know, the health issues of Navajo people.
Yeah, well, so, again, and this is a question to you, Gloria. Now, you know, basically Heather said that this thing is has been vetoed and is and it could be overridden, and it just has, you know, it's part of the legislative process. So we all agree it's a health issue. It's a health bill, and we're looking at the health of the Navajo people. And so what do we do now? What's going to happen? I mean, what's the exact status of this particular after it's been vetoed?
Well, as maybe someone kind of briefly mentioned, Delegate Simpson will be requesting an override veto to be on the April spring session of the council 2014. So in a couple of months, you know, we're right now working on going back and meeting with delegates and garnering support and looking at those delegates that voted, you know, no to maybe, you know, change their vote. So we are actively working on going back to the council in April for an override veto.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, so that's where it stands at. So the next question that I want to get into is the business side of this whole thing. We had talked about, and I think that when you send me the information on through the email, it basically outlined some of what was considered junk food and what was considered the health food. And the scenario is that the 2% would be tax for the junk food, and actually no taxes would be assessed for healthy food. And but as we are, and so now we have determined that we all agree that this, you know, that yes, the spirit of this legislation is about health. Now, but now the next step would be is to find out is to, okay, well, now the part that this whole process is slowed down is really is implementation, as well as the tax office. And so now, having said that, you know, I am understanding that the money that are being used in this particular public awareness for Native American health is really coming from the Indian Health Services. Am I correct on that, or am I... Gloria.
Well, it began with Indian Health Service. They did provide a lot of training to the advocates on what is an advocate, how do you organize and mobilize your communities to be educated on the health issues. We were taught kind of like the research and the stats and statistics, you know, surrounding the health issues, and then how to present them out to our community and that kind of thing. So they've been very instrumental in helping the advocates be educated and then using new skills and being equipped with the statistics and data. However, a lot of us non-federal IHS staff, you know, we volunteer our time, we volunteer, you know, traveling. I just came in from Santa Fe this evening myself. I just moved out to Santa Fe a couple of months ago. So a lot of us travel from different parts of the reservation to our meetings, our work sessions, or going to chapter meetings. And so, you know, it did take a lot of volunteer time and efforts on our part. And I went ahead and even extended myself out, and I wrote a mini-grant to the First Nations Development Institute in up in Colorado because, you know, some of our non-federal staff needed gas money to get to chapter meetings. And some of the chapters, we had to go back and forth to them twice. And so, you know, it takes a lot of time, and there's some resources involved, and First Nations has been very helpful in terms of getting gas and different kinds of other resources to us that IHS has not been able to provide.
Interesting. So when we're talking about this particular Healthy Nations or Healthy Native American public awareness monies, how much money is there? Gloria?
I'm not too sure, really. I don't know that I could really say a concrete budget because, like I said, you know, a lot of us have been donating hours and hours to, you know, presentations or traveling somewhere and that kind of thing. So I don't know that we could pack on a budget. You know, we never really kind of took a look at that side of this advocacy work. I do know, though, that when I wrote the mini-grants to First Nations, we did get, I would say, let's see, at this point, I went and wrote another mini-grant to go to the council on in April. So it's, they've given us a total of, let's see,
Okay. So, yes. So, you know, the next question would be is that while we're – so it sounds to me like – well, this idea is absolutely a wonderful idea. You know, we need to think about the Navajo people and their health. I mean, that's, you know, we all kind of agreed on that. But so at what point did this, could it have just been a public awareness campaign like a lot of the metropolitan, you know, cities, the state government, they have an issue about health, you know, diabetes, and, you know, those sorts of things. And the health department from the government, they implement a public awareness campaign, and it's out there. And but I'm just curious, at what point did this become a legislation, thereby collecting a tax on it?
When we first were in our training sessions, you know, 2 years ago, us advocates, you know, learned different kinds of issues. We looked at optional kinds of solutions, you know, to the health dilemma affecting Navajo. But because Navajo is in such an epidemic state of obesity and type 2 diabetes and even cancer now is growing, and cancer is even the second killer of Navajo people on the reservation, and diabetes is the third killer of Navajo people. And so the urgency to do something immediate and quicker was, you know, discussed extensively. And so what this taxation solution is more like a wake-up call to the Navajo people to please look at what you're purchasing and consuming that is making, you know, our Navajo people become sick, or what kinds of food products that are more healthy and that can make us stay better. So we took a look at it in terms of also prevention. And I know President Shelley had a comment in his press release that said it's a federal responsibility. And yes, you know, we understand the Indian Federal Trust responsibilities, you know, of the federal government for health services for us Navajos. But when we took a look at federal sequestration issues now, cutting budgets, you know, in our health care services on the Navajo, and we're seeing some of our clinics closing, or some of our services being cut back, or even the emergency services are being cut out of our hospitals and clinics on Navajo. You know, we told ourselves as advocates, part of our values and philosophy is going to entail us Navajos to go back to health prevention. And when we met with Navajo delegates, they agreed with us. They said, you know, 100 years ago, we didn't have all these prescription drugs, and we didn't even have these clinics. And so you're right, you know, we need to go back to some of our traditional health practices and look at prevention, because we are seeing all the federal dollar cuts. And so the taxation solution, you know, is a wake-up call to the Navajo people, because it's not a very much generating of funds, okay? We realize that. But what we're just saying is the message is more important than, you know, maybe the money that's going to be coming into, you know, this project. So that's how we came up with our solution, because of the health issue, the health epidemic. And I've seen statistics of the trends when I've been out training teachers on using diabetes prevention lessons, where as much as 160% increased trends for our age category of, you know, 20 to 30-year-old people within just like a matter of 5 years. And I just got off the phone with one of my health prevention staff this evening, and she said, Gloria, there's two tribes in Arizona that are at 90% of the tribal membership, they're diabetic. And she said she heard a statistic by 2020, Navajo Nation could be to that level. And that's not very far away. So we're doing this more as important trend and epidemic issue.
Yeah, well, yeah, certainly. And, but, you know, and back to the implementation or the actual taxation, I want to present this question to both of you, and I'd like to have, there are listeners who are actually sending information, and the biggest question that is coming forth is that by presenting this idea as a public awareness campaign, that's one thing. However, when you start taxing and collecting taxes from this thing, isn't there kind of an inherent intrusion by a government, in this particular case, the Navajo Nation government, and why would the Navajo people, and it would go to the grassroots level for the people who are vendors on the side of the road selling pots or either on parade routes or at chapter house meetings and so forth? Does that mean that people are basically being denied where it should be pretty much a choice of every individual whether they want to maintain a healthy life or not? So the question is this a governmental intrusion? I'd be curious to see what the president's office's position would be on that and what your group would be on that, Gloria. And Heather, I'd like to give you the first shot at it.
I think what Gloria is talking about is definitely, I think, a fact. The fact that the Navajo Nation's health issues where we're at is at an epidemic. And we did have people come into the office saying that, you know, it shouldn't be the Navajo Nation or any government placement to go ahead and tell them what they can eat or not eat. But then again, on the second hand, like Gloria had stated, is that, you know, the high cost of health and, you know, because of the repercussions of people making poor choices in their health is a problem. And the people do turn to the Navajo Nation, to their government, to help fix this. You know, this is under your watch. This is happening. You need to do something about it. So they kind of turn around and place the responsibility. On the other hand, say, don't tell us what to do. But then they turn around and ask for the government to solve the problem too as well. So, I mean, I can definitely understand the argument that Gloria is coming from. I think also, on the other hand, not only with health issues, but just basically running a government itself, a government who is definitely underfunded, to put an example of putting money in there, and I would tend to agree with Gloria that, you know, no amount of money is substitutes for your health. But the reality of it is people are still asking for government funding and help when we don't have that money available. Also looking at the taxes on there, even though we are wanting to go ahead and use this as a wake-up call, there, just for clarification, there was two legislations that were vetoed. One of them was the one that went ahead and implemented the 2% tax on, you know, high sugar foods or junk food tax, that they call it. The second legislation was to go ahead and decrease the sales tax revenue by eliminating taxes on fresh fruits and vegetables, water, nuts and seeds, et cetera. But when you actually look at the issue between the two, the 2%, like Gloria said, I mean, we didn't even have any like financial analysis of how that would affect the Navajo Nation. So what our tax commission did was kind of estimated how much the cost would be. If you're looking at the high level of the tax being, let's say, the 2%, you would get anywhere from like $2.5 million, which, you know, as Gloria explained, would be spread across the Navajo Nation chapters. With 110 chapters, like she also mentioned, that's not very much money at all to maybe implement parks or buildings or of help, help for their goals. The second part of it is the decreased amount of sales tax. So we're going to be taking away 5% of the fruits and vegetables that we're getting. If you look at that, that's going to decrease, again, estimation, because there was really no financial analysis done on this. So the guesstimation on it that we got from the tax revenue, or from the tax commission, was we would be losing, at high percentage, almost $2 million of tax revenue. And even though $2 million doesn't sound too much, that $2 million also is going to the chapters when you look at how the taxes are divided. So that would have a decrease of money going to the chapters, and then the possible increase of going to a special account, which would dealing with these projects. So you also have to look at that part of it too. It's not only necessarily the health aspects of it, but actually how administration will work on that and how the cost, the cutback on that. So there was too many questions, I think, when we really looked at that. We didn't have enough of the financial analysis. We also don't have a different department of, like, a Surgeon General to kind of help us deal with the situation. And I appreciate what Gloria is saying, is that she is, and they are working with our health department on these matters on how to implement these things. I think those are the realistic parts that we were looking at, so of how this legislation would affect. So it wasn't so simplistic. It was actually really thinking about government administration and how to deal with this. So, I mean, it wasn't something that was not thought of thoroughly. And we did take this definite legislation seriously. And like I said before, I really do believe that the awareness that was bringing out there is warranted and is needed. And I think that the legislation and the hard work for the 2 years that Gloria said did not go unnoticed. And I think was successful, regardless if this particular legislation didn't pass or not. So I think that's what we kind of had to look at it, not necessarily just for the health issue, but the overall how to deal with it within the government system.
Right, but can you address specifically, do you think that by taxing this, what seemingly is a public awareness campaign, that it is now a governmental intrusion on people's personal lives?
I think I actually did address that, but I mean, I can't give the direct answer because, like I said, you get the point where I mentioned before that we had got a whole slew of comments saying that the government shouldn't be telling us what to eat. But then again, like I said, what Gloria mentioned is that when people need to go to IHS or the health because of the impacts of their because of the impact on the choices that they're making of what type of food to consume, those are impacting their health. And when they go to the hospital, you know, going into IHS, a lot of our people don't have insurance and health insurance or things, how to pay for these medications or anything of that sort, then they turn to the government and ask, you need to help us because we need to go ahead and have this medication for our health, and you have a responsibility to implement this. So, I mean, that's the best way that I can answer it. I mean, is it an intrusion if we tell them that they can't tech, to some extent, yes or no, depending on how they look at it? We're not telling them that they can't purchase it. It's just going to cost more to purchase it, you know?
There you go. Perfect. Okay, Gloria, you have the floor.
Okay, yes, thank you.
The same question.
I want to make maybe some comments about what you said, Heather, and I'm glad you brought up the financial analysis, because we kept going back to the Tax Commission office and asking for numbers because, you know, the delegates wanted to know. And so we're just glad that they finally came around and did some estimates at least. In regards to the government intrusion comment, sure enough, you know, if we take a look at seatbelts and we take a look at, you know, some of these other public kinds of safety programs, you know, that's what we're doing and looking at, you know, the junk food tax. And sure enough, when we did go out to the chapters and the chapter members told us, you know, please don't tell me what to buy or please don't tax me, you know, extra on my soda pop because, you know, I'm not going to give it up no matter what you're going to do with it. And, you know, so we were very aware of, you know, how the public were feeling this way or that way regarding, you know, food choices. And we even had some grandmothers come up to us and tell us, hey, I buy junk food for my grandchildren to buy their love. And, you know, a lot of our elders out there on the reservation are taking care of their grandchildren in great numbers. So, you know, we take to heart, you know, what that is doing, but we have to now tell the grandmas, and, you know, this is a process of education that, you know, there's other ways to show your love for your children. And some of the grandmothers finally told us, I'm glad you told us about some of the impacts of all these sugars and fats and salt on these this candy and different kinds of foods, because now, you know, I'm going to be more careful about, you know, what I'm going to be feeding or buying for my grandchildren. So, you know, it's just a matter of education. And when the Navajos listened to our presentation and presented our resolutions, you know, we did do an education process with them. And when they became aware of, you know, the detriments of poor quality food and that kind of information, finding some turned around and said, well, we want more health education then. We want more food cooking classes then. So, you know, the public awareness for me as an educator was much more valuable in me participating in this type of project, because it was starting to turn light bulbs on to people, and they're now rethinking about what they're buying and what they're eating.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And we have about 20 minutes left, and I have another guest who's also been waiting for about half an hour. And I appreciate both of you being here with us this evening. I think we got a lot of information out there. And I'd like for each of you to present your final thoughts and how to contact you and all of that, five minutes each. I would really appreciate that. Gloria.
Okay, yes, thank you. Our Donate Advocacy Group does have a Facebook page, and the last I heard of it, it was called Donate Advocacy, or go to Donate Community Advocacy Alliance, and you can see the various activities we're doing. We're doing even fundraisers combined with education, like Zumba parties, maybe nutritious dinners, and so on like that. So meet us on Facebook, and you can even call me. I am available to do, diabetes prevention lessons. My phone number is 505-923-0378. And my email address is Gloria_Begay2004@yahoo.com. And I'd be very welcome to have folks call me, contact me, see our Facebook, and get involved with us. We're looking for more and more volunteers. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Gloria, and you're, you know, just to let you know, I mean, you know, that you're doing some very good work, whatever angle, whether we're all on the same page or not, you know, health is an issue. So thank you very much for all the work that you're doing. So we'll probably have you back on the show again here to continue this discussion. So if you'd be willing to do that, I would really appreciate it. So again, ladies and gentlemen, all you listeners out there, that was Gloria Begay from the Dene Community Advocacy Alliance. Gloria, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, now, Heather, you got the floor.
Thank you, Cal. This is actually very exciting, having to go ahead and be on your show. So thank you for hosting this and having the opportunity for us to have this discussion. I think this is very helpful. Again, like I said, I'd like to express my congratulations to Gloria and her group. I think they're doing a really good job, and I think that they have been very successful regarding this legislation. It's the Office of the President and the President really thinking about this legislation. Both of these legislations wasn't something that was just, okay, this doesn't make sense. We did have a lot of insider discussions, listen to people, to talk to people on how to deal with the situation, because he does advocate help for the Navajo people, and that is something that he is definitely very concerned with. And so that was definitely very important. But like I said, basically on an executive level, we have to implement those legislations. So we also have to look and see how we can also successfully do that. It is very difficult in us to go ahead and not wanting to diminish any of the efforts that Gloria and her group has done. And we felt that when you're looking at it, if people are confused, and Gloria talked about education, which I think is key to a lot of things here on the Navajo Nation, is education of how to do something, how to deal with it, not to just have it out there. I mean, I know, like I said, one visitor say, just pass it and then we'll have to figure out how to deal with it later. I mean, we do so much, sometimes we conduct business that way, and that's not very successful. So we didn't want that confusion. I mean, we had to realistically not just look at the health aspects of it, but the whole implementation of it. How are the businesses on the Navajo Nation going to be able to deal with it? There was no education time in order for them to understand it. Consumers, too, as well. And then how would the money affect with it? There hasn't been a financial, accurate financial accounting. The financial analysis is basically a best guess estimate that was given. And those are some of the things that we need to go ahead and look more towards on the Navajo Nation, is to have an economist so that we can really look at our taxation to see how we can maximize it to help the Navajo people, as well as figure out how to deal with this on a government level. So there's that broad overall blanket that the President has to deal with and how to understand it and figure it out too as well. So, I mean, definitely want to understand that those people out there, that it wasn't vetoed because President doesn't care about health. It's more about the overall, how does it affect the Navajo Nation government and how can we successfully implement these things. And I'll just to give you
how
an example.
How do people get in touch with you?
You can go ahead and reach me at the President's office. You know, the phone number there is area code 928-871-7000. You can go ahead and contact me through that. You can also contact the health department, too, as well, regarding specifically on the subsequent matter. If you have any questions on the legality of it, I'd be, of course, more than happy to discuss the issues with you. So thank you again for having us on the show.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much, Heather, and for all your for the time that you've given to us. And so I know that everybody is working in the spirit of getting this thing so that we all can benefit, or the nation can benefit. I think that, you know, both sides are looking at all the particulars to make sure that whatever we settle in on is going to be for the betterment of the Navajo people. And so there's the legal issues that we need to look at. It sounds to me like this has now come down to a implementation, and you know, this is not the end of the road. We need to continue to have these dialogue. We need to continue to talk. And it's going to be out there, and it's It's our discussion. It's our life, and I'm glad to hear that the Navajo Nation government is not intending to go in there and to intrude, but they're willing to say, "Hey, you know what? We care about you," and that's really the message. And I applaud both sides of the equation that they're in good dialogue. One thing that's good to hear is that they are in discussion. That's absolutely wonderful. And so we have about 10 minutes left in the show. And for all you listeners out there, I am sorry. There's several people that are calling, and I can't get to you. So for the remaining 10 minutes, I would like to bring Mr. Francis Lee. Am I right on that?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, and you're going to talk about ICIP. Tell us about that, and we only have 10 minutes, so we're going to have to really rock and roll here, Francis. And what is ICIP?
It's the Navajo Nation Comprehensive Infrastructural and Capital Improvement Project on Plans. It's under the Division of Community Development.
And that was the recent discussion where they were talking about the $400 million that is earmarked for the Navajo Nation chapters.
This is a multi-year plan, contains a total of $400,822,744.
And yeah, and what's the status? You know, give us all the skinny on this thing. So go ahead and just go rock and roll here.
Okay, this one was brought before the chapter back in 2012, July 9th of 2012. Prior to that, back in August, they had finally brought this into the council where it would start the SAS process. At that time, they had earmarked $400 million plus, and they wanted to do government buildings, they wanted to do a chapter house, they wanted to do recreational areas, judicial facilities, senior centers, parking lots, the water system, plus major equipment and purchase of them. But as time went by, through all the SAS process, it's been brought back and forth. So it went before council in January. It went before council just recently again. And the last session back in January, the $400 million came down to $239 million. And at one of the sessions where Catherine Benally back at one point made a directive to the Department of Division of Community Development that this money was for the Navajo people. It was to funding to bring essential services infrastructure to the Navajo people. And she was upset about because all the other things that were there were governmental buildings and things that the people don't use. So she had made a directive that all the chapters, and that she told them that she wanted the first priority listing of each chapter, 110 chapters. And in there, the ceiling limit was $2 million. For my community, the priority project that the community approved was a new preschool, which was going to be a $1.8 million project. So at one point, I went back before them, and I told them that I wasn't happy with what was being presented forward to the council. And I lobbied against the approval for them to move forward at one of the sessions. And at that time, the reason why I told them I wasn't happy with that lobby was that any time when it becomes a bill, are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. We're listening.
So any time when it becomes a bill, it's hard to amend especially in this amount of money. So my recommendation was that why can't they give the Navajo Nation 110 chapters the right information where all 110 chapters will submit and can submit their proposal. In this funding, they have to submit a proposal where it's ready, shovel ready. And so that's what had happened. And just recently at one of the meetings they had over this past session, they had brought it before in January 28th. And at that time, it was tabled on the floor. The reason that it was, it's really frustrating is because this is going on for 2 years now, and there's a dire need for our community services. And why is it that the council is not working directly with the chapters, especially the community service coordinators? Because they're the one that continue to update their WIN systems. It's a WIN system that the Navajo Nation that utilize our infrastructural development. And it's a public information on that one. It's www.wind.enavajo.org. And when you go there, it'll show you the system where you can track your projects, where you can track your SAS tracking, and you can look at your chapter's budget. You can look at everything. It's right there. And so when we did that, we looked back on it, and just recently, when we went before the council, they had said that my chapter has not submitted one. There was three council on the floor that were lobbying each other to table it and then also to request for a 30-day extension, and they did that. But on February 21st, the information I got back was that the council reverted back to Resource Development Committee, and then Resource Development Committee goes back into NABI again. So why is it so hard? When you read that 125 page of that legislation, it strictly states what OMB says about this documentation. It strictly talks about what the other programs are talking about. And so I emailed you one of this copy to you, the legislation tracking number 0118-13.
Yeah.
So that's the bottom line of this project. So it came down from 400 million.
We only have about 2 minutes left. So what do you recommend? What do we do? And how do we get this thing rolling? So if you can say that in about 15 seconds, I'd appreciate it.
I would recommend that all the chapters work with their all the chapters official work with their chapter administration and get these all done so they can go back to RDC and then go to NABI and get this thing finally done and over with and get our services brought to our community.
There you go. And again, I know that Mr. Francis Lee, he is a businessman himself, and as well as that he he works for the Navajo Nation and has some very in-depth information that I know that we just ran out of time this evening to, but I'd like to bring him back again because I think this, you know, $400 million is huge. I'd like to thank our guests, Gloria Begay and Heather Claw from the Navajo Nation President's Office, and Gloria being from the Net Advocacy Alliance, and also Bill Donovan. Thanks to Marley Shabala, and she called in, but she had to do some other things, and we'll bring her back, and she had some wonderful things. So, everybody, have a wonderful week. If you have any questions, just re-listen to the program. They gave out their information, and we're going to keep moving. And you guys are, I absolutely believe in my Navajo people. This is to have this open dialogue, and we're going to continue that. Again, this is Politics on Navajo Nation, the world voice on Navajo politics. This is Cal Nez, and I will see you guys next week.
to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by CalMez.